Hare Krishna, devotees, Prabhus and Matajis. We have His Grace Sankarshan Dasa on the conference, a disciple of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So most of you have probably read the email that I've sent out, so you know much about the speaker. So I won't spend any more time, and we'll just get started with the class. So Prabhuji, welcome back to the Chapa teleconference after a year. So really,
thank you very much.
Really delighted to have you here. So all the devotees are on the conference, and more are joining as we speak. I'll just mute the conference, and we can begin the class. One moment, okay?
Conference muted.
Okay, Prabhuji, go ahead. It's all yours.
So, to begin with, I'd like to...
You'll just have to speak a little louder than usual, okay, because we're on the...
Okay, to begin with, I would like to invoke the auspiciousness of the auspicious blessings of the previous acharyas and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Parakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupa Sagra Jata Sagana Raduna Tanvita Tam Sajiva Sadaita Savadutam Purijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha. So, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Shri Krishna, out of His unlimited kindness upon those souls who misused their minute independence, has very mercifully manifested in the form of Sri Harinam, in the form of His holy name, so that one who is disconnected in this material existence from that all-merciful Supreme Lord can reconnect with Krishna. So there is no limit to how merciful is Krishna, nor how merciful is the holy name of Krishna, which is not different from Krishna. Actually, the amount of mercy which is there in the Lord and His name is inconceivable, the chincha. We cannot begin to even comprehend how much mercy there is in Krishna and His holy names. But we can take advantage of that mercy. And that is the actual purpose of human existence. We are meant to reconnect ourselves with that all-merciful Lord Krishna through the process of chanting the holy names. Of course, in other ages, there are other systems. In the Satya Yuga, it was by the yogic meditational system. In the Treta Yuga, it was by great sacrificial ceremonies. In the Dwarpa Yuga, it was by the temple worship. But in the Kali Yuga especially, as we have many times heard from the Brihad Naradiya Purana, Harinama, 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 Iva Kevalam, Kalo Nasteva, 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 Gatiran Yata. Chant the holy names, chant the holy names, chant the holy names, chant the holy names. There is no other alternative, there is no other alternative. There is no other alternative for God realization in this age of Kali. Why is it three times stated? It is three times stated to negate, not by yoga, not by karma, and not by jnana. So, there are unlimited names, as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has so mercifully revealed to us in his Chakshastakam. There are millions and millions of names. But it is specifically mentioned in the Kali Santarvana Upanishad that there is no name more effective, more powerful, more potent, more effective in this age than these 16 names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And these names have especially been brought down to us by the Goswamis of Vrindavan under the guidance, the tutelage of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This Hare Krishna chanting is especially emphasized and empowered by them. Now, Rupa Goswami, he is very, very nicely described the holy names, the great power of the name of Krishna. This is mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Anchalila, chapter number 1, text number 120, as follows. Tunde tandavani vitin vitinute tundavali lambdiye karna karada kadambani gatayate kanarbudebhyas priham cheta prangana sangani vijayate savendriyanam kritam na jane janita kiyad dhiramitai krishneti dvarnadvai. I do not know how much nectar the two syllables Krishna have produced. When the holy name of Krishna is chanted, it appears to dance within the mouth. We then desire many, many mouths. When that name enters the holes of the ears, we desire many millions of ears. And when the holy name dances in the courtyard of the heart, it conquers the activities of the mind, and therefore all the senses become inert. What does Rupa Goswami mean by this amazing verse? What is the point he is making here? We can understand, through analogy, some idea of what he's talking about here. Just imagine, of course, everyone loves prasadam, especially if there's a nice feast with all the opulent preparations, varieties of sabjis, pakoras, chutneys, sweet rice, you know, 10 types of halavas, you know, puris and sandesh and gulab jamun and cheesecake, and you get the picture. So just imagine that to honor you, someone wanted to give you a nice feast, and they brought you to some warehouse, and there was a huge warehouse with, you know, 10,000 preparations. You say, okay, now I'll enjoy it. And you say, well, thank you very much, but, you know, I can't really enjoy this whole feast. I can take a little sample here and there, and it's about it. So, in this way, we can give us some understanding of what Rupa Goswami is talking about here. He's feeling that his one mouth is just not enough. There's so much nectar to be tasted. In other words, the name dances on the tongue, you see. Krishna's name dances on the tongue. And there's nothing sweeter, nothing more relishable than to have Krishna's name dancing on the tongue. But there's so much nectar. What good is one tongue? It's like one mouth in a warehouse of 10,000 preps. It's just not enough. So he thinks, we then desire many mouths, you see. You know, if I had 10,000 stomachs and 10,000 mouths, then, you know, then I could make a dent into that warehouse with 10,000 preparations. But with my one little mouth and one little belly, what can I do? So in this way, Rupa Goswami is talking about the holy names. Actually, here he's referring to the two syllables, Krishna. So, and then he goes to the next point of the ears. First thing is the tongue is relishing inconceivable nectar. they just like, it's actually the lotus feet of Krishna are situated right there on your tongue. Krishna's two lotus feet right there on your tongue. And then the next thing is the ears. The ears, he says, when the name enters the holes of the ears, then we desire many millions of ears. In other words, even 1,000 ears is not enough. Even 10,000, even 1,000,000 ears is not enough. There's so much nectar in that sound, Krishna, that millions and millions and millions of ears are required, you see. So in this way, he's describing what is the great power of Harinam, Krishna's name, Krishna. And then his final point, which we use as the title of this presentation today, when the name enters, dances, you see, the name dances in the courtyard of the heart, it conquers the activities of the mind. Now here's a very nice point in this connection. We can remember from the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, yato yato nishchalati, manas chanchalamashtaram tatastato nayam yaitat atmaneva mushamniyam. It is described that from wherever the mind wanders, due to its flickering and unsteady nature, one must certainly withdraw it and bring it back under the control of the self. Now this is specifically for the yogis, you see. They are doing the mechanical process, yam, nayam, asana, ajahara, etc., up to the point of samadhi. They are through a process of regulating the movement of the life airs within the body. They are bringing the mind under control. In other words, I will control my mind. You see, that's the method of the yogis. But here, there's a whole different approach. The bhakta, even though he is controlling the mind, he's not doing it as the controller, as the yogi is trying to do it, you see. Here, the bhakta, he is simply diving into the name, and the name does the controlling part of the process, you see. He just dives into the name, into that unlimited ocean, you see, the Namamrita Sindhu, that unlimitedly vast ocean of the nectar of the name. He simply dives into it, and then he doesn't even have to try to control his mind. See, the name takes care of that. So this is why bhakti is so much easier than the Ashtanga system. Because in the Ashtanga system, one artificially tries to maintain his position of being the controller, which we are not. Krishna is the only controller, you see. So the bhakti yogi, the bhakta, he takes advantage of the supreme reality that Krishna is the, you know, he's the supreme controller and we're just all the tiny little servants. So he takes advantage of the supreme reality and he simply dives into the name and then everything's taken care of. Sense control happens automatically for one who has dived very deeply into this Namamrita Sindhu. And then it's a wonderful dance. Just imagine, the most incredibly amazing ballroom dance that was ever held in a courtyard, you see. The orchestra is there, the most amazing orchestra playing all kinds of amazing songs with all kinds of amazing instruments in an amazing, ecstatic, jubilant mood. Just imagine some courtyard dance going on in the higher planets or something like that, the most amazing courtyard dance you could ever conceive of. Well, that's what happens when one actually dives very, very deep into this nectarian ocean of the name. Then the name, there's actually a dance going on in the courtyard of your heart. It's a dance, a big dance party, a big dance celebration going on in the courtyard of your heart. And then the last point, Rupa Goswami, is that the senses become inert. This is, we read about this in the bhava stage, a highly advanced stage, and we saw this in Prabhupada sometimes. He would become so deep in this ecstasy. This courtyard dance would be going on in his heart with such great intensity that he couldn't even speak. His senses became inert, you see. He became stunned in wonder. in a state of supreme transcendental wonderment, you see, by the power of Krishna's name. So this is the great verse that Rupa Goswami has given to us to help us understand what we're, you know, how fortunate we are to be have been blessed with this name by Srila Prabhupada, that will solve, which can and eventually will solve the problems of the entire world, as predicted by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. Such janna dur janna pangu, janta anagana, prema vanyaya dubaila, jagatera janna. What is that prema vanyaya? That is a tsunami of Krishna consciousness. The Krishna consciousness movement that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has inaugurated and that Prabhupada has brought outside of the borders of India throughout the whole planet, that is actually a tsunami, a prema tsunami. And it is predicted by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, who is not an ordinary person by any means. He's one of the gopis, one of the gopi associates of Krishna in the spiritual sky, who has perfect knowledge of past, present, and future. And he has authoritatively stated that this prema tsunami will indeed inundate the entire world. Prema vanyaya dubaila jagatera jana. Everyone will become drowned in this prema tsunami. So what is that wave? You see, that is the wave of Krishna's name, Krishna. That is the wave, the cutting edge wave of that tsunami, which is inundating the entire universe, not only this planet, but it's predicted by Prabhupada in his purport that this Krishna consciousness movement will inundate the entire universe, not only planet Earth. Of course, we can understand all the universes will be inundated by this Krishna consciousness movement, because that is the unlimited mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu upon all these souls. Jivera Swarupa Hai Krishnara Nityadas. The constitutional position of every single jiva throughout all of existence is that he is the eternal servant of Krishna. So this Krishna consciousness movement is not, as Prabhupada is, we've heard so wonderfully explained by Srila Prabhupada, is not an artificial imposition on the mind. It's the original natural energy of the living being. You see? So this is not a cult, as we are accused of being a cult. Actually, you know, cult means some brainwashed thing that you're duped into, conditioned into accepting. That's what they call a cult nowadays. So this is not a cult. The material world is a cult. You see, they've been duped into this false conception that I am this body. When did the programming begin? Well, it started right there when they came out of the womb. The little baby is there. All the family members are there. Oh, it's a boy. It's a girl. Oh. You see, immediately, that jiva is hearing that he is a boy or she is a girl. And in this way, the conditioning into the cult of material consciousness has begun. They're initiated at that time when they come out of the womb into the cult of material consciousness. So Krishna consciousness movement is not imposing anything on the mind. It is simply removing all those things which have been imposed upon the mind. The natural consciousness of a living being is to be a devotee of Krishna. We're just trying to remove all of the obstructions, all of the garbage that has gotten in the way, all the monkey wrenches which have been thrown in to obstruct the gears. We're just going in and cleaning them out by the power of Krishna's holy name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I don't really feel that 10 minutes is enough for questions. If I could open it up for questions now, I lean towards having more question and answers in my lectures than I do just talking endlessly. Is it possible that I could have for questions now?
Oh, sure, Ruby, 1 second.
Great.
Okay, so we're all unmuted. Prabhuji, I can start with a question.
Okay.
You mentioned this prema tsunami, will get the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu through this prema tsunami. But we know that we're in the age of Kali Yuga, and it says the scriptures say at the as the age of Kali progresses, all good qualities of men diminish and all impure qualities increase. Atheist systems of so-called religion become predominant, replacing codes of Vedic law. It's described in the scriptures. Kings become like highway bandits. So that's in the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Right.
So when you mentioned this prema tsunami, when does that actually occur? Because at the conclusion of this, the Kali Yuga, the Lord descends, and then we go into the Satya Yuga. So when does this actually happen?
Yes, it is described by Prabhupada, mentioned in his purport. There is a 10,000-year period that began with the advent of Lord Chaitanya, at which time the Krishna consciousness movement expands, and after 10,000 years, then it contracts, it goes away, and the full-on Kali Yuga then becomes manifest. So during this 10,000-year period, there will be an increase of this movement, just like we've seen how Prabhupada's preaching started at the little storefront at 26 Second Avenue, expanded out, and we see how this movement is still expanding. So this movement will gradually expand during this 10,000-year period to the point where the Vedic culture becomes reestablished on this planet. There'll be a Satya Yuga-like atmosphere temporarily. So the 10,000-year period is up, and then it'll all evaporate, and the full-on Kali Yuga will become fully manifest. Now, how soon that will happen, that's up to us. How much we become pure in our practice of Krishna consciousness, because the more that we are purified, the more we are potent to spread this movement. So it's up to us how much deep will we get into the names. And Prabhupada explains in his purport in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that if one chants the holy name without any offense, completely pure Shuddhanam, then by his chanting, Prabhupada says he becomes Jagat Guru. And under his influence, the entire world will take up Krishna consciousness. So this is, it's up to us then, because to whatever extent we become pure, to whatever extent we reach the pure platform of chanting, whether it's 5%, 10%, 20%, 30%, 80%, to whatever extent each one of us becomes pure, that will create a synergy for this movement. And if we have members of ISKCON becoming 100% pure, then that's really going to empower the synergy of ISKCON. So this Japa conference you have is very important. It's playing a very integral part in the empowerment of this movement to actually bring about the Krishnaization of the entire planet. So I'm very happy that you all are churning this, the Japa ocean, the Namamrita ocean every week. And so this is how it will happen. The more we dive deeply into the name, the faster it will happen.
So it will happen within the next 10,000 years? Is that
within the next 10,000 years, there will be a total inundation of Krishna prema on this planet. That's a fact.
And what
now
happens?
Now it's 9,500 years, approximately now. Yeah.
And what happens to those who don't take up the Krishna consciousness movement?
Well, Prabhupada mentioned this point in his conversation in Columbus, Ohio, with Allen Ginsberg. He said, "Those who do not join this movement, he said, they will see the fun." In a joking way, "I'll eat you, you eat me." In the end of Kali Yuga, when they invite you over for dinner, you're the dinner, you see.
Wow. Okay.
So that's what it'll be, a full-on cannibalism. Everybody will be reduced to pygmy size. The human beings will be reduced to the stature of pygmies. There will be cannibals everywhere. The whole planet will become cannibals, like in the African jungle now, pygmy cannibals. The whole planet will be like that. Pygmy cannibalism will be the world culture.
Okay. Hey, thank you, Prabhuji. So, other devotees have questions?
Hi, Krishna. Prabhuji, this is Gail from New Jersey. My question is, you mentioned before that there's no other way, no other way, no other way, and it's because of the fact that you cannot do it by yoga or karma or gyan. When you say we cannot do it by yoga, does that refer to Ashtanga yoga?
Yeah, it doesn't refer to bhakti. So the question is, when we say not by yoga, does that mean by Ashtanga yoga? Yeah, that's right. It's not saying not by the bhakti yoga system. It's saying not by the mechanical yoga system.
Yeah, I was just wondering. I think it's obvious it wasn't bhakti yoga, but you know, just was it does it specifically refer to Ashtanga yoga?
When Prabhupada explains it in his purport, he doesn't mention any particular type of yoga. He just says not by yoga. But we can understand that refers to any system of yoga other than bhakti. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's also said not by jnana or karma. So my question is also, does that refer to karma yoga and jnana yoga? Because the reason I'm asking that is because jnana yoga.
So the question is it saying not by yoga, not by karma, not by jnana karma yoga? Does it mean not by karma yoga, not by jnana yoga? Well, karma yoga is actually a preliminary stage of bhakti yoga. So it's not saying not by karma yoga, it's saying not by karma. And jnana yoga can be understood differently. If you take bhakti jnana, that's a type of jnana yoga. The yoga means linking. There are one type of jnana yoga is the yoga of the jnana of the impersonalists. They're trying to link up with impersonal Brahman. That type of jnana will not. Another type of jnana yoga is the jnana of the bhakta who's studying the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam. That is just like Bhakti Vedanta, our Prabhupada's name. It is Vedanta combined with bhakti. So that kind of Vedanta, that type of jnana, bhakti jnana, that is favorable for advancing in Krishna consciousness. But any type of jnana which has not come to the point of bhakti, that is unfavorable, and one will not achieve perfection by engaging in that type of jnana.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Hare Krishna, please accept my humble obeisances. My name is Anandalal Das. I follow your daily thoughts, you know, it's wonderful, and I'd like to know thanks from the core of my heart that you are enlightening.
Oh, thank you very much.
I have a question, you know, that things, and I wanted to get clearance from you.
Hmm.
In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells, Vishaya binivartante niraharishya dehino, rasapajya rasabarjun, rasapajya rasapasya, paramdishtha nivartante. Now, we are material things, you know, we are trying to do something, but vishaya binivartante, what it means, in a completely cessation from the material things.
So the devotee, the question is, does one have to become fully detached from material things to become Krishna conscious? Is that your question?
Yes.
There's two types of detachment. One type of detachment is the detachment of the impersonalist who wants to completely have nothing to do with material nature. He tries to deny it in every way. He very austere. You avoid interacting with the world. That's one type of detachment, and that is not successful because he can never get free of the conception that he's the center of the universe by that method. The other type of detachment from matter is to engage matter in the service of Krishna. Just like the example is given, somebody walks into the Bank of America with a gun to rob the bank. You see, that's a criminal. Another person walks into the Bank of America, he says, I renounce this bank. You see, he's a madman. He doesn't own the bank. So someone who says, I renounce this material world, that's actually madness, because is it your world to begin with? Is it yours to even renounce it? You see? So it's not that the devotee doesn't interact with matter. He just doesn't interact with matter for his sense gratification. Actually, the devotee becomes most active with the material energy for engaging in a Krishna service. Look at Arjuna, for example. He said, I want nothing to do. This battlefield is material. I want nothing to do with it. I want to become detached. And Krishna said, no. You fight this battle. So the highest form of detachment is to be very active in this world, engaging it fully in Krishna's service. That's the highest type of detachment. That's the detachment of the bhakta. So that is the detachment that actually gives one the higher taste. Without that engagement of the material energy in the service of Krishna, one never gets the higher taste. That's why the taste of bhakti is called Nirvana Vilambitani, that which minimizes the taste derived by detaching oneself from this material existence.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other comments, questions?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. This is Yadunastas.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Bo.
Who is this?
It's Yadunastas.
Oh, Jai.
Hey, I want to thank you for giving the class once again. It's good to have you back. And also want to wish you a happy belated birthday. I know your Vyas Puja was earlier this week. So happy
thank
birthday.
You very much.
Finally, when you talk about the world spreading the movement during the Golden Age, I'm just curious as to your feeling as to whether the Golden Age will be specifically ISKCON, you know, this Hare Krishna movement, or bhakti, pure love of God.
Mm-hmm. Actually, a combination of both. Except for those who aren't, I have people here in the room with me who are not hearing the question. I'll repeat it for them. He's asking the question, This golden era of Lord Chaitanya, will it just be ISKCON, or will it be bhakti in general? And the answer is both. Because we don't say that everybody has to join ISKCON in order for them to go back to Godhead. Prabhupada always explains that whether you're a Christian, a Buddhist, a Jew, a Sikh, a Jain, or whatever, if by your practice you've developed a point of pure love of God, then you are first class. So we are not that we're trying to convert everybody to be ISKCONites. Our program is to act as the leading educational institution within the universe to actually teach people what is the science of pure bhakti. They can do that as a Christian. They can do that as a Jew, a Jain, a Sikh, a Muslim, or whatever. They don't have to give up their activities in their church and join us. In fact, one of our members, it was on my e-course, he is a Baptist minister. He didn't stop being a Baptist minister when he became Krishna conscious. He kept his identity as a Baptist minister, and he would lace his Sunday sermons with Prabhupada's philosophy in Christian terms. He used to send me transcripts of his Sunday sermons to show me how he was giving Prabhupada's teachings in Christian language. And he eventually got initiated also, became initiated disciple of our movement, all undercover. He's still a Christian minister, Baptist, Southern Baptist. So it's not that, you know, we want to teach everyone what is the science of pure bhakti. That is our mission. It's not our mission to get everybody to join ISKCON. Those who are highly qualified, they will join this movement. But others who are not, we will teach them how to become highly qualified within their own tradition. So the answer is both. ISKCON will be accepted as the leading educational institution on the planet, and the others will keep their identities, but they will see Prabhupada's books as the guiding principle, how to be a perfect Christian, how to be a perfect Jew, a perfect Muslim, a perfect Buddhist, etc. Prabhupada's books will be the accepted authority by everyone.
Great, thank you.
By a vast majority. Yes. You're most welcome. So are there any other questions?
Prabhuji, this is Rasala Krishna Das again. What I thought was interesting that you had said was that, if I understand this correctly, is that one who dives deeply into the name controls the mind and the senses. So I thought that was very interesting because usually you think that, like, you know, the mind will, you know, control the senses, and which is true, but here, you know, you're saying that, you know, by diving deeply into the name would take that control.
The name will control the mind, and the mind will control the senses. So by the power of the name, everything becomes fully properly situated. Goswami.
Right. So that's a contingent on diving deeply into the name, and so. So, for the audience here, how would you define that? You know, diving deeply into
the. So the question is, for those who are here with me in the room, how do we define diving deeply in the name? Because we're learning from Rupa Goswami. This is how the mind becomes conquered, which means how the senses become conquered. So to be able to dive deeply into the name, where it's actually dancing in the courtyard of the heart. How does one do that? It's a very important question. So the answer is as follows. The first point is we have to keep the mind fixed on the name. That's the first point. And the second point is we have to understand that we are the servants of the name. Many times I'm guiding many people through my preaching or taking up japa, and they often complain to me. They say that, you know, I'm chanting, but I'm not tasting the nectar, so I'm becoming discouraged because I am not tasting the nectar. Well, I point out to them, you're not tasting the nectar because you're trying to taste it. Your approach is wrong. You're trying to enjoy the name instead of trying to serve the name. As long as we try to remain the enjoyers of the name, we're missing the whole point. Lord Chaitanya said, "Get punished, your eternal servant." We don't care if we have to go to hell for chanting Hare Krishna. Even if we're pushed into the Patala Loka, we don't care. We just want to please Krishna. So the point is that the way to dive deeply in the name is don't try to enjoy the name, you try to be the servant of the name. Surrender fully to what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, which means surrender to his representative. As he points out in the Adi Purana, ye me bhakta jana parata, na me bhakta stache janaha, mad bhaktanam che ye bhakta, te me bhakta yana. The one who is my devotee, he's not my devotee. But the one who is the devotee of my devotee, he is my actual devotee. So we really want to dive into the name. We have to understand the name is manifested also in the form of the spiritual master. And we have to surrender ourselves to the bona fide spiritual master. He's a representative of the name. So by this complete surrender to the orders of our Guru Maharaj, who is the external manifestation of Krishna's name, or of Krishna himself, That's how we actually become servants of the name, by becoming servants of the servant. And through that service to the bona fide spiritual master, Krishna accepts us as being his actual devotee. And that way we're actually able to dive deeply into the name. So it's a matter of taking shelter of a bona fide spiritual master and fully surrendering to him without any hesitation. That whatever Guru Maharaj says, I will do. His order is my life and soul. As Prabhupada exemplified, that whatever Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati would tell, he was fully surrendered to doing them. Even the impossible, seemingly impossible task of spreading Krishna consciousness to the English-speaking world, he embraced that order within his heart, even if it seemed impossible to him. How this could ever be done? But he embraced it very tightly in his heart, and he meditated on it, he dedicated himself fully to it, and the power of Krishna, the power of Krishna's holy name, that became manifested. So we have to see who is the representative of the name, fully surrender ourselves into following his instructions 24/7 with our every thought, our every word, and our every deed. In this way, we'll become perfectly absorbed, and deeply, deeply absorbed in the Namamrita Sindhu, the nectar of the name, the ocean of the nectar of the name.
Okay.
Any more questions?
I don't know. I have another question that somebody else doesn't have.
Prabhuji, you have questions from your class there in Austin, the devotees there?
Does anybody here have a question? I can repeat it to you. Anyone here have a question? Is there a question coming here? This is a question.
Mataji, you have a question?
There's a question here from Dr. Rob, okay. Say that question again, it's not clear to me. Well, if one is
can you repeat the question, Prabhuji?
The question is, even if we're chanting even if we're chanting offensively, is chanting still clearing up? That's a very good question. I remember hearing sometimes people would say, well, you know, my chanting is offensive, so it's better I don't chant. Well, if all of us had to follow that principle, none of us would be able to chant. The power of the name is so great that even if it's chanted offensively, it purifies us. So we should just clearly try to avoid the offenses, and then gradually the offensiveness is cleared off. In the beginning, we may be 100% offensive or 99%, and then it becomes 98% offensive, 97% offensive, 90% offensive, 10% pure, and gradually the scale tips in our favor and we cross over 50% line, and I'm, you know, 51% pure and only 49% contaminated. So in this way, we just have to keep chanting, and then gradually that offensiveness goes away and the full-blown sun of Krishna Prema rises within the heart. We achieve 100%. And we'll actually see Krishna face-to-face when we reach that point. Any other questions here from the class? Okay. All right, go ahead. So what is the question? So he's asking, well, what if you're chanting offensively? It's stated that, you know, you can go on chanting offensively for millions of years and never achieve Krishna Prem. There's a difference between somebody who's trying to become free from offensive and someone who is knowingly continuing their offensive mentality. The greatest offense is Vaishnava Aparadha. One knowingly maintains ill will towards Vaishnavas, then your chanting is not going to, you know, you're not going to become a pure devotee. But one has to consciously try to avoid the offenses also. Along with chanting, one has to consciously avoid the offenses. And in that connection, I can point out, because we often hear this point, don't be offensive towards devotees. But that is actually stated in a negative way. One may say, well, I don't want to be offensive, so I'll just play it safe and I'll go to the forest. That way I won't be offensive towards any devotees. But that's not the meaning. The meaning is you should be in the association of the devotees. So how do you avoid being offensive? Well, you have to take it the proactive stance of always being loving towards the devotees, not being secretive or not engaging in the, once you openly engage in the loving exchanges, revealing your heart openly and honestly with the devotees, not being willing to, when they open their hearts to you, giving gifts to devotees, accepting gifts from devotees, serving prasadam to devotees, receiving the prasadam from the devotees. One should be cultivating loving, open loving relationships with Vaishnavas. In this way, then there's no scope for offense. Offenses automatically are gone if one is cultivating ongoing loving relationships with all devotees. And that's the real meaning of ISKCON. ISKCON means the loving relationships between the devotees. If we don't have loving relationships, then ISKCON is dead. There is no ISKCON. The real ISKCON is the loving relationships the devotees have with each other. And if those loving relationships are there, then one's chanting will bear fruit. You can't become any more advanced in chanting than you are in the way you associate with devotees. So we have to really master the art of devotee association, because without that, our chanting will never become offenseless. So I think it looks like our time is up now. According to what I see on the clock. So anything okay. else there, Prabhu? Anything else I can say, or any more questions I can answer?
That's all from my side. Any devotees have comments?
I have a question if there's still time.
Prabhuji, can you take one more question?
Yes, I can take. Okay. I'm just concerned about your
No,
time.
We have the full hour till 9,
oh, okay.
9 a.m.
All right, I'm on for the next 10 minutes, and no problems. If you have questions, I'm here to serve you.
Okay. Mataji, ask you a question.
Okay. You were saying in answer to a question that we should not chant with the spirit of wanting to enjoy the name. So I was wondering if I'm chanting with the intention to one day be able to enjoy a loving relationship with Krishna. Is that improper?
All right, so here's the question for those who are here with me in Austin. If I'm chanting Hare Krishna with the desire to one day to enjoy a loving relationship, that is proper. No, it's not. It's wonderful. But one has to understand how one actually enjoys a loving relationship with Krishna, by giving enjoyment to him. See, there's nothing wrong with desire to enjoy Krishna consciousness, to enjoy the name. One simply has to understand the science of how that will actually happen, you see? And that will happen by, in the mood of wanting to give pleasure to the beloved instead of trying to extract pleasure from the beloved, you see? That's how it will happen. One has to know the science, that I will get my pleasure by giving the pleasure. So let me become expert in giving the pleasure, and that way I will get the pleasure. That's the secret science of bhakti.
And also, in reference to another answer you had given, the name controls the mind and senses.
Well, one who is advanced in chanting, yes, his mind becomes completely conquered by the name. That's it.
Okay, well, I guess maybe it's for one who's advanced, because I was thinking that we also, it seems like at the same time there has to be the control from the opposite direction. Otherwise, you won't even be able to chant. Like, you have to control your senses, and
yes.
your mind. And
let me explain, let me repeat this for my my audience here who's not on the phone. She's saying, well, it doesn't have to go the other way, that the Vista states where the name controls the mind. Don't you have to engage in control of your senses? The answer is yes. The neophyte devotee has to control his senses. Therefore, we have rules. You must chant 16 rounds on the beads every day. You must avoid illicit sex, meeting, intoxication, and gambling. You should rise early and attend Mangal Arti, have it at home or have it at the temple. You should, you know, worship the Tulsi tree. All of these different, go to the holy dhams. In this way, there's so many rules and regulations given by Rupa Goswami so that one can achieve that level where the mind is indeed conquered by the name. But in the beginning, yes, you have to consciously control so many things, your diet, your association, what you read, what you don't read, what you see when you surf on the internet, what you don't see, so many things we have to regulate.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Manishi, for your question.
Okay.
Does anybody have anyone? Because I just had one last. If
you're welcome, Manishi. Go ahead.
Yeah, when you were answering Yadanath's question about, you know, anyway, you said that those who are highly qualified, they will join ISKCON. Those who are qualified, but maybe it seems as though you were saying not as qualified, they will follow Prabhupada's teachings and maintain and try and do that within their own religion. And so I was wondering why, if this is what you were saying, why they wouldn't be considered, you know, on the same level as those who, let's say, join ISKCON, you know, just stay with, like, within
the... No, but the question is, how can we consider those who don't actually join ISKCON, but who strictly follow Prabhupada's teachings within their own tradition, how we consider they're equally qualified?
Or not equally, I don't know.
Or not equally qualified.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it really depends. That will depend on each individual situation. Obviously, we're making a blanket statement about millions of individuals, and each individual will be in his own position. So you really have to understand each person in his own situation. You can't say we can't really make an absolute blanket statement out of it.
Right.
I didn't really mean it in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no doubt that those people who are qualified, or I mean to say attracted to directly connect themselves with Srila Prabhupada Sampradaya, are the most highly qualified spiritualists on the planet, that's the fact. And others who respect Prabhupada's Sampradaya, coming that Prabhupada represents, and who want to implement it in their own tradition, they're also highly qualified. But they're not on the same level as someone who is inspired to directly take Diksha into the Ramamadha Gaudiya Sampradaya. Although we also highly respect them, we don't denigrate them in any way. But at the same time, there's a special qualification for those who are attracted to take Diksha within this Sampradaya, that's a fact.
Yeah, because the superiority of this Sampradaya over... I guess not is blank.
Is there superiority of being in the Sampradaya as opposed to being outside of the Sampradaya?
Yeah, what is that superiority?
It is a superior position. There's no doubt because this is the line coming from Lord Chaitanya himself, who is Krishna himself coming on this planet. This is the most potent connection with the Supreme Person that's available right now on this planet. So the other connections are not as potent. We don't say, just like it's stated that in the Kali Santarana Upanishad, that the Hare Krishna mantra is the most powerful, most potent. That doesn't mean the other names are not powerful and potent. Lord Chaitanya says there's millions of names. So in the same way we should understand this movement as opposed to other spiritual sanghas. We don't say that this is the most powerful, most potent necessary. We don't say they're not making any progress if they align themselves with the Prabhupada and implement them in their own traditions. They give up, they follow a vegetarian diet, they offer their food, they give up illicit sex, meeting, intoxication, and gambling, and chant the holy names of Christ or Muhammad, etc., they are also making spiritual advancement. And they could also go back to Godhead. But the most powerful manifestation of Lord Chaitanya's mercy is right here directly in his Sampradaya, that's his name.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's the most one because it affords the most intimate relationship with Krishna, right?
Yes.
The fact that this
takes one to Goloka Vrindavan.
Mm-hmm. Whereas other names of God will not afford such intimacy.
It's not as intimate, that's a fact. They're accepted as names, Amechan, Allah, 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 or Jehovah. And those are accepted as bona fide names of God. They can purify the consciousness. But the intimacy is not as intimate. It's from a distance. Worshipping God from a distance. But
yeah.
The Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya is taking into an intimate relationship with the Supreme Person. That's a big difference.
Yeah, I was trying to say that seems to be the superiority to me.
It's certainly one of the factors, no doubt. But to speak of the Hare Krishna Kirtan and the Pashadam and so many other things, the deity worship, and, you know, compare this with other religious organizations, and in many ways, ISKCON outshines what the God consciousness which we experience outside of ISKCON. This is the highest level, the Rolls Royce. There's so many cars, but this is the Rolls Royce.
There are so many what?
So many cars, but this is the Rolls Royce.
Oh.
We don't say that they're not God conscious.
Yeah.
But, you know, we say this is the highest level of God consciousness available. So Prabhupada's movement is the highest level of God consciousness that one can experience. One takes seriously what Prabhupada is teaching is the highest level that one can experience. Looks like our time is up now.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
So we'll conclude the class. Prabhuji, thank you so much. Thank you all the devotees for joining. We have these classes almost every Saturday morning on the same.
How many people were on the call?
It was close to 20.
Oh, okay.
And plus, I guess the
we had another 10. We had another 12 here. So
okay.
So that makes them think of a higher number.
So thank you very much, all the devotees, and thank you, Prabhuji, and
Jai.
Anyone wants
thank you
to...
very much, Prabhu, for Lasala Krishna Prabhu, for doing this nice service for Papa's mission. We appreciate this opportunity to share. With you with a little mercy from Papa.
And thank you for the wonderful realizations you've shared with us today. Thank you so much.
Jai. Jai. Jai.
Jai.